His voice had grown noticeably weaker. He could no longer reach the high notes, and at times he was reduced to a vocal style that was closer to the spoken word. He was conscious of his loss of vocal power and range, but Reuben urged him on, telling him not to bother with continuous retakes. The fragility added to his art. When he sang about this world of woe, his weary, broken voice supplied conviction. When he sang of that bright world to which I go, that voice gathered a soulful yearning. As Bono perceptively observed, the initial revolution at Sun Records in the 1950s gave young people a voice to celebrate youthfulness, and now Cash, with great dignity, was leading another revolution against the ravages of age, as the first of his generation to sing about the dying of the light. Every time I recorded Johnny Cash, I knew that it would be around forever, says David Ferguson, who increasingly found himself at Cash's cabin engineering these sessions. You take extra time with stuff like that. As far as recording him went, you could take the cheapest microphone in the world and put it in front of that guy's voice, and you know exactly who it was as soon as he opened his mouth. He had so much character in his voice. It got harder during Solitary Man because his voice would change so much. It got harder, but it was still so much fun. For Cash, the loss of vocal power brought frustration. He felt that he was performing beneath his ability. Reuben recalls, "Some days he would sing well, but you could hear the age in his voice. I would tell him that it didn't sound as though he was tired. It sounded like he was emoting the song. Eventually he'd come around. There were times when he'd even joke about it, saying that no songs out there were safe because he was going to get hold of them and ruin them." Whenever Cash completed a batch of material, he'd send copies to Reuben in California for review and then, health permitting, fly out to finish the tracks. In Los Angeles, guest vocalists joined him in the studio. Sheryl Crow on Field of Diamonds and Will Oldham on I See a Darkness. In Hendersonville, Merle Haggard joined him on I'm Leaving Now and Tom Petty on I Won't Back Down and Solitary Man. Two unexpected trips to the hospital interrupted recording in October 1999. The first trip was short, stitches for a gashed leg. Though the second stay for pneumonia was longer, good news came in the form of a revised diagnosis. After reviewing his condition, doctors decided that instead of the terminal Scheid-Dräger's syndrome, he suffered from the less lethal but more vague condition, autonomic neuropathy. At the news, Cash shrugged. I knew I didn't have such a nasty-sounding disease anyway. Despite the physical setbacks, Cash always remained positive. He never complained he had been handed a bad deal, nor did he question God's plan. He maintained an unwavering gratitude for every blessing, those received and those to come. On August 16, 2000, he wrote in the sleeve notes for Solitary Man, I wouldn't trade my future for anyone's I know. His unexpected reference to his future may seem strange, especially knowing that his future held little more than the promise of declining health and diminishing faculties. But not to Cash. The Master of Life's been good to me, he wrote. He gives me good health now and helps me to continue doing what I love. He has given me strength to face past illnesses and victory in the face of defeat. He has given me life and joy where others saw oblivion. He has given new purposes to live for, new services to render and old wounds to heal. Life and love go on. Let the music play. The album came out on October 17, 2000, and again met with critical acclaim. Almost immediately, Cash set about collecting and writing for his next album. The most ambitious song was The Man Comes Around. Unlike anything he had written before, he mixed prophetic judgment with visionary insight and delivered it half in speech and half in song. It came, he said, from a dream he had had of meeting the Queen of England, who told him, Johnny Cash, you're like a thorn tree in a whirlwind. He remembered the phrase, he said, and later traced it to a passage in the Old Testament book of Job. The phrase, however, did trigger an extensive search of prophetic and apocalyptic literature. The song, crammed with ringing phrases lifted from various parts of the Bible and pieced together as a collage, depicts events surrounding the final judgment when the man, Jesus Christ, comes around. The image of the potter's ground refers to the burial ground for foreigners bought with the 30 pieces of silver Judas was paid for his betrayal. Matthew 27:3-8. The phrase Alpha and Omega is God's description of himself as the beginning and the end. Revelation 1:8. The admonition, "Whoever is unjust, let him be unjust still," is also attributed to the Lord God. Revelation 22:11. Cash admitted that he spent more time on this song than any other he ever wrote. It shows. The Man Comes Around exudes an intensity of something written by someone who knows time is short. The warning is stark. The man is returning to decide who to free and who to blame. And lest anyone should think that the concept of a loving God means that heaven is inevitable for all, he adds the reminder, everybody won't be treated all the same. He underscores the importance of being ready for the return of Christ when he uses the line, "The virgins are all trimming their wicks," Matthew 23:7. This track could never have been as effective had he recorded it as a young man. Cash's cracked and sometimes breathless voice sounds both urgent and compassionate. It's not the voice of youthful zealousness or sheltered naivete. It's the voice of the pilgrim at the end of his journey. The song's construction presented a musical challenge. "We cut it a few times," says David Ferguson. "We first cut it with Marty Stewart and Johnny as a TikTok sort of thing. Then he worked on it again with Randy Scruggs. It was then edited to make it meter out." The way Johnny laid it out, only he knew where the changes were going to be in the instrumental parts. It was something he had to learn. Rick would take a bar out here and a couple bars out there to make the whole thing uniform. Cash's deteriorating eyesight meant that the words of each song had to be printed in 18-point bold-faced type for him to be able to read. Nick Cave was visibly shocked when he met him for the first time in Rubin's studio, where he recorded a duet on the Hank Williams song, "I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry," and the traditional song, "Cindy." There were steps into the studio, and he had to be led down them very slowly by two people, he says. One of his illnesses meant that when he went from light to dark, he couldn't see for a while. He looked real sick, and he just sat down and was blind. He asked me if I was there, and I told him I was. His eyes adjusted, but it wasn't immediate. But when he started working, he came alive. This man who I'd seen virtually having to be carried down the stairs was utterly transformed when he started singing. In his own words, "This is what I love to do. This is what I want to do. I want to do as much of it as possible." It was his cause for living. The other experimental track on the album was Trent Reznor's song, "Hurt." Few would have spotted a Johnny Cash classic lurking inside the Nine Inch Nails rendition, but Cash did. While still a junkie, Reznor had written the song about the despondency of someone addicted to heroin who not only hurts himself but those who love and try to help him. Although Cash never shot heroin, he could certainly relate to the sentiment. It was a song about disengagement from friends, feelings, surroundings, and even conscience. Yet in Cash's mouth, the words took on another dimension. The numbness of the opening lines became the numbness of living on medication. The needle came from the familiar IV unit. The sweetest friend referred, of course, to June. The everyone I know who goes away in the end included Ray and Carrie, Maybell, Ezra, Anita, and Helen Carter, Roy Orbison, Waylon Jennings, Luther Perkins, and Jack Cash. His empire of dirt manifested itself in his possessions, awards, and earthly reputation. "Hurt" could also be about vicarious atonement. From this perspective, the sweetest friend is Christ. The empire of dirt becomes Cash's collection of sins, and the pain at the heart of the song reflects the pain of the crucifixion. The song, then, becomes an admission of his unfaithfulness to Christ. At the same time, it provides an assurance that this unfaithfulness is included among the sins for which Christ died.